Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 479, John Wick 3, Parabellum.
No, didn't get it.
Chapter 3.
You missed one.
Oh, is it chapter 3?
Yeah.
I don't care. You're not a book. Books have chapters.
I don't know. It's one of those things. I've liked the, just part 2.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There's just something about, like, that old timey, like, 80s way of doing it where you don't give a subtitle. You're just like, nah, it's part 2.
Yeah, it's not that old-timey to have a number in the film title.
Well, I mean, like, part 2. Like, everything has a subtitle now.
Sure.
You know?
But that's what I'm saying. That it's like it. But that's a relatively recent.
Oh, really?
Like, the first major film with a number 2 in the title was, I believe, The Godfather.
Oh, that makes sense.
And so
– when was Jaws 2?
Jaws 2 was – well, I mean
– 81?
When was it? Probably around then. 80?
Yeah.
Ish? Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so, but that would have.
1978.
What year was Jaws?
Jaws 2 was 78? Mm-hmm.
Boy, they put.
Jaws was 76?
75. Okay. 3 years later.
Okay. Yeah.
Godfather Part 2 was 74, so that predates it by quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you didn't get a lot of twos in movies. There were sequels. And,
right.
And there were movies that were franchises. I mean, there were a million Blondie movies and things like that.
I think this one is weird, though, and I get what Joe's saying, because what he means is you can just say John Wick Chapter 3 or John Wick Part 3. It's weird to do Part or Chapter 3 Parabellum, because you're already calling it the title part. Why do you have to title that part? Usually they just Godfather 2, Back to the Future Part 2. It's not Back to the Future Part 2 Future. It's, you know, Back to the Future Part 3 Western.
It's just one of those, you know, like, these are quickly becoming the new 80s action movies. Like, this style
I saw someone describe it, and I thought this is a great description. It's an R-rated Mission Impossible.
Absolutely, yeah. It is.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing when I was watching it.
Yeah.
It is exactly what that is.
So we should probably go around the table and introduce ourselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And returning to discuss films with us again via the magic of Skype-a-phone is Garrett Wright from Two Views Movies Podcast. Hey, Garrett.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
It's always a pleasant surprise when they return for the second one.
Look at that.
They came back.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, my Wi-Fi is down. Sorry.
Gotta go.
Yeah.
You ready to talk John Wick killing some people?
Oh, yeah. I would go through great lengths to be able to talk about John Wick. I love it.
Excellent.
So before we dig in, quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe, and check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. Stay up to date on important stories throughout the week, like the death of Grumpy Cat.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Is it?
We're all a little grumpier now.
Yeah. That's just my natural disposition.
Of course, our Patreon account, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get bonus content and you help us out. So there, that's all that. We will now dig into John Wick Chapter 3, Paragraph 9, Subsection 6.
The cool thing about these movies is they don't give – there's no time jumps.
Yeah.
Like, they pick every two picked right up after one. This one picks up right after 2.
I think that's where the chapters come in. I like that. I like that they're just chapters. You just turn the page. Not that there aren't time jumps in books, but for the most part, you go to the next chapter. It's just the next little part of that same
and that's story. What that's what we're doing here. So it's we just open up in a not great rain over New York, like it's or wherever they are. That I guess they don't really say where. I guess they're in New York.
They're in New York.
But like the – I mean you see them in Grand Central
Station. I guess that's true. Yeah, yeah.
But like the whole – it's a big sweeping shot. Overhead shot of the city, and it looks like they just put like a rain filter over it. I was just like, you know what? I don't even care. Like, if that's what you're gonna do, that's fine. And it's him running through the streets of New York with the pit bull, and he's I think it's hard enough to shoot in Times Square.
I think that's true.
But without it being rain,
like, to make it rain on top of it.
Correct.
Yeah,
and we know that he's on the run.
Yeah, we should say he's got an hour. He was given an hour by Ian McShane's character in the last movie. So if you haven't seen John Wick 2, you probably should watch that.
You can't because you can't really watch these direct, out of order.
It's a direct sequel.
Yeah, you need to watch 1 and 2.
You can watch awesome killing scenes, but still, like for the story to make sense, it would be really hard to jump in at 3.
I agree.
As they are continuous, as Joe said. Right. So he's got an hour at this point. He has like 50 minutes left of this hour he's been given.
Yeah,
and so he is excommunicado, which means in this world of the assassins and the Continental and everything, you can't use their services. No one that is affiliated with them or the High Table, who is the big bad guy, the organization that rules over the Continental and all the other assassins in this organization, no one affiliated with them can help you. So
correct.
And there's a $14 million contract on his head
that hasn't gone active yet.
Yeah, so he's
about to go active. Yeah.
Now, real quick, jumping back. So the director, Chad Stahelski.
Yeah.
So we've talked about him before. The two guys that worked on the first movie were both involved with Keanu on The Matrix. That's how they met him.
They were stunt coordinators on The Matrix.
Chad Stahelski was a stuntman.
Yeah.
And David Leitch was who's the guy that went to Deadpool.
Deadpool 2, yeah.
He was a stunt coordinator.
Right.
So they both worked with Keanu, and they both have split off into these awesome careers. Did you know that the director of this, Chad Stahelski, was the double for Brandon Lee in The Crow?
I did not. You know what?
He's the one that you would say that
is because there are scenes in this movie I was like, this would have been Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
Like this, if Brandon Lee had stayed, had got, you know, unfortunately.
Are you saying it wouldn't have been Mark Dukakis or whatever?
No, I mean John Wick would have been.
Oh, John Wick?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think when you look at what Brandon Lee was doing before he died, like he's doing scenes like this.
Yeah,
you know, like in The Crow, there's a lot of him like falling off buildings, and you know, he obviously his father being who he was, he has a knack for how to choreograph a fight scene. So if you look at Little Big Trouble Little China or Rapid Fire, his fight scenes, they're a little, you know, he's green around the gills because he's new at acting, but his fight scenes are legit. So I have a feeling that if he had stayed alive, Lord knows what his career would have. I mean, he would have been a megastar. I think he probably would have been like Keanu, where he was a megastar and maybe he falls off a little bit and he comes back and does these ridiculous action movies. And he, you know, but there are a lot of scenes in this where I was like, man, this is really weird. Like, it kind of reminds me of The Crow.
I thought you'd find that interesting.
I do. That's great.
The Crow.
I do love
The Crow. He was his double, and he was the one that filmed the scenes after.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So anyway, but yeah, so this guy knows stunts on. I think.
Oh, Mark Dukakis played The Crow. There was a Crow TV show.
Oh, he did.
Called Stairway to Heaven, where he played Eric Draven.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So I think when we talk about the action in these films, and this movie is no exception when we talk about the action sequences.
This one has ramped up. Like, you didn't think they could ramp up after 2. And then they do this. You're like, well, Jesus.
From the beginning, the scene with him on the horse.
Yeah.
Although
the CGI in that horse scene was pretty.
A little wonky.
A little wonky.
I didn't think it was that bad.
But I accepted
it.
Like, I was pretty bad. Like, it was what it was.
I'm not normally one to pick apart CGI.
Right.
But I was just like, this is pretty bad.
It didn't bother. I mean, the fact that they used real horses and real dogs, I think, is incredible. Like, this
that
movie
dog
is,
sequence
is mind-blowing.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. So, this guy knows action, though. And so, my point is, this director, he started off in the industry doing as a stuntman.
Yeah.
So he knows action. He knows what it's like to be on these sets and how to pull the stuff off.
He knows how to shoot them.
Yeah, and exactly. And so another thing, besides from how awesome they are, I'm glad you brought that up, is he doesn't do the quick cut choppy action.
He pulls back and lets you see everything.
One take, you know, for a lot of the, you know, extended takes for a lot of the sequences, and you see the action. They choreograph until they can't choreograph anymore, and then they film it. And so that really is a testament to why this series is so successful. But hats off to him. I mean, I think he's an excellent director for action. And, you know, and I think David Leitch is good, too. And you look at what they've done going off to do Because it's David Leitch, Atomic Blonde. We had mentioned that earlier.
And Deadpool 2.
So he did Atomic Blonde, Deadpool 2. We've got the John Wick series just getting better and better. So like these two guys know action. And we talk about a lot of times with Marvel hiring people that know the genre of the movie.
Right. You need to get these two guys for Shang-Chi.
Oh.
These are the dudes that you need to bring. They've got a director already, but bring some, like, I'm sure that they have proteges. Like, bring those guys in to do the stunt coordination for that Shang-Chi.
I think these guys are directing from now on, I hate to tell you.
That's fine.
You know what I mean? You got to give them a movie to direct.
Sure.
I agree. But
Iron Fist, I make it real.
Yeah.
So garbage TV show.
So how do you up the ante? Is what Joe says. And talk about the first fight in this movie. So in John Wick 2, the big deal was the pencil.
Right.
He killed someone with a pencil.
Yeah.
How are you going to up the ante? The first kill, the first fight in this movie is a book.
Yep.
As he runs to the library.
So he's on the run. He's injured at this point. Runs to the central library. And I thought that the librarian was in on it, but I didn't get that vibe.
Everybody he talked to was going to be in on it.
Because
at this point, as he passes people, everyone's looking at him. They're checking the time.
Right.
This is why you have to watch the second one. But in John Wick 2, you see how many people come out
over.
Of the woodwork. And you know that this organization is, embedded everywhere.
Mm-hmm. So he gets to the library and he finds this one book. And he peels like the page back. And there's a crucifix, one of the blood oaths. And some more coins.
I think it was actually a rosary, wasn't it?
You're right. It was. Yeah.
Sorry, I went to Catholic school.
I did too, but I was.
Called a ticket in this world.
Right. And a stack of the gold coins. And as he's getting the stuff, he puts it back down. And then all of a sudden, this giant of a man comes walking around the corner. And I do like, Keanu's one of those actors where his off-screen persona. I don't think I've ever seen a dude who's more...
Who can flip the switch like that?
Who's more genuine. Like that thing on Colbert where he was just like, what happens when you die? And like he sits there for a second and he thinks, he was like, I don't know, man. Like the people who are still alive are going to miss you. And it's just like, what? Like that just came off the top of your head? We see him all the time where he's like, we see him standing in the subway because he gave his seat up for... Yeah. Or he gives away all of his profits for the Matrix 2 and 3 to like the cast and crew. Like he's a rare breed in Hollywood. But then you see him in John Wick where he's snapping a guy's neck with a book.
It is crazy.
It's
revered as a nice guy in real life.
Yeah.
But he's so believable as a cold-blooded killer.
But that's the thing is like he's had this – like if you watch his career, you look at him at Bill and Ted. You look at him in Point Break. You look at, so he had like that surfer guy and like, yo, what's up, dude? But now that is gone.
As far as acting goes, I mean, as much as we love Keanu Reeves, he kind of started off as a joke.
Oh.
I mean, with his acting abilities. You weren't hiring Keanu Reeves.
Have you ever seen Bram Stoker's Dracula?
Yeah.
He's awful.
That accent?
In that movie. Yeah.
No,
I don't know what accent he's trying to do.
I mean, I love Keanu Reeves and I love a lot of his movies. I love Point Break.
Oh, like, it's amazing.
I just mean you are not hiring Keanu Reeves for his acting abilities, like his pure, trained Shakespearean acting. He was in a lot of action movies.
Yeah,
he was
Speed.
A heartthrob.
I mean, Speed's a massive movie.
But he's really found his niche with these type of movies and doing this stuff. As he's gotten older, and I think he's gotten better, too.
I don't like it when he smiles. It weirds me out.
Oh.
I find it creepy.
Yeah.
And now he's going to be – they're coming – him and – the guy from is it Winter, the other
Alex Winter.
They're coming back to do Bill and Ted 3.
From St. Louis?
Yes, he's from St. Louis,
and I don't know what to think.
He went
of that.
To Flow Valley.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like I love Bill and Ted. Like those two movies, the cartoon, the comic book. I was all about Bill and Ted, and now that these guys are coming back, I was like, I don't know if I want them to come back.
It's going to be like, when you see like the Three Stooges movies?
Yeah, right.
Or like Three Stooges Around the World in a Day.
Yeah, sure.
Or Have Rocket Will Travel. And you're just like, this is kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm fine with them coming back, but it's just like, that's not – that version of Keanu is not who we have anymore. So I don't know if he has that in him.
He seems like a nice guy who I'm sure can have fun on camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your introduction before we get more into the plot, Garrett, with John Wick movies?
Oh, I went with my co-host back when John Wick 1 came out. I hadn't heard much about it. Hadn't really seen any of the trailers, right? And then randomly I started seeing like 10 out of 10 reviews come in. I'm like, what in the world is going on here? We got to go see this. So we went and saw it. And we walked out. We're like, how is that as good as it is? Like, it should not be this good, but it's incredible. And then you start reading about, like you guys mentioned already, the pedigree of the stunt coordination, but then also the ability to have the eye to capture that on the screen, because that's two different things. You can choreograph something until you're blue in the face, but if you can't capture it on the screen and you jump cut and you shaky cam, it doesn't really matter. And these guys clearly knew how to frame an action sequence, and we haven't got into this. I'm sure we will. But then you take that action, and that's fantastic. And then you just layer in these little nuggets of world building. And I just left wanting to read everything about the Wickverse, right? The Continental.
There's a
the
comic
coins.
There's a John Wick comic as well that IDW or Dynamite put out. Let's do this.
This is what elevates. Like Garrett's saying, action movies don't do this. Action movies don't world build for the most part.
Yeah.
They give you some exposition about why the character is going to kick ass, and then you go kick ass.
Jump from action set piece to action.
I feel like Die Hard
piece.
Did that. Like Die Hard started
not really.
Die Hard 1, you get what you get. Die Hard 2, you get the Winston.
But the world that John McClane lives in is nothing compared to the world.
Yeah, but then in Die Hard 3, he's fighting the guy's brother.
Yeah, it just seemed arbitrary.
It didn't feel like world building.
Yeah, that's one guy's connection. Like, they did that for – it is connected. We're not saying they're not interconnected in the universe, but – the world building of the Continental and the assassins, and then the High Table.
The arbitrators.
Action movies.
The currency that they abdicate.
Yes, they create it, and then they follow through. And when we in the third movie see these gold coins, we know what those do.
Right.
And when we see a marker, we know what those do.
Right.
This movie has invented things that we're just like, yeah, we're on board. We know you got the gold coins. This costs about that much, and a marker means you owe this person. The Continental, you can't fight on those grounds. Like, this is all stuff that action movies do not do.
Right.
Now, interestingly enough, we were talking about action movies creating their action sequences and then writing around them.
Right.
That's how they make these movies, too.
But it works.
No, but they use different people. So in an interview, David Leitch and Chad Stileski, they said that they would come up with – and this was Chad talking, but he said they would come up with these action beats. He and Keanu would figure out what they wanted in these movies, and they would write those parts, and then they would bring in other people to come and write the story, and they bring other people to come in and make sure the world all worked and made sense. So they brought in different writers with different tasks as opposed to one person writing it and just a rewrite or another draft.
Right.
So it wasn't like that. It was like you brought in people specifically and gave them tasks.
Okay.
And so they made sure that each person, so you've got the fight and the choreography. Obviously, the director is coming up with all that stuff. And then you've got these people on the story, and then you've got other people that are like, yeah, the Continental and the High Table, and how is this all going to work, and who's over who? And so it's smart the way they do that, and so we get not only the great action, but we get this world that, as Garrett said, it's like, as soon as this movie was over, I'm like, I want to read online. I want to make sure I understand this, and what else wasn't in the movie that we can learn about.
Here's the other thing I appreciate. In the timeline of these movies, they are taking place like in 3 days or however, that's consecutive. So it would bear to reason that John Wick is getting the beat out of him,
Oh, yeah.
So by the time we get to this one, what year did the first one come out? Like 2016?
No, not 15? One. No, 14 maybe for the first
one. So he's 5 years older in real life. So he is slowing down.
Yeah.
And that works almost perfectly in this world because he is getting the Jesus beat out of him for 4 or 5 days.
And it's interesting that you bring that up. So again, in one of those interviews, the director said that Keanu is getting older, but we work to his strength. So in the first John Wick movie, in The Matrix, there's a lot more punching and kicking and kung fu and that stuff.
Right.
And they say in these movies, there's a lot more grappling.
Yes.
And so they're working with Keanu because we're all getting older, but instead of just trying to have the same type of action, you work around what your capabilities are. And not only
unless you're Mark Dukakis and you just don't age. Yeah. Good Lord, that guy.
Hoggenholm?
Yeah. I'm thinking more like Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I just every time I
see
him.
He's the dude from Iron Chef America.
Well, yeah. When he wasn't he the one cutting up sushi in this movie?
Yes.
I thought that was hilarious because I'm thinking in the Iron Chef,
there's a moment where I was hoping that was Sonny Chiba.
Oh.
And they were gonna tie in how insane would it have been if he was Hattori Hanzo.
Yeah.
And they were just like, oh, yeah, by the way, Uma Thurman is in this world as well. Like, she's part of this.
She was actually up for the role that Halle Berry had.
God, that would have been amazing. And look, Halle Berry, to her credit, like there's that training video online. She took the she took the gun training very seriously, and
they
she
don't
was,
mess around with these.
No,
movies.
She was great. Yeah. Like she's one of those gals that she kind of got. I mean, you know, she did Monsters
Ball.
Do you know
what happens when a toad gets hit by lightning?
It's everything else. It's a shame that did, you know. Yeah. It's whatever. But, like, she's one of the actresses that kind of disappeared. Like, she got the Oscar for Monsters Ball. She did Catwoman. And then that was kind of it. And she disappeared for a while. She did Gothica, which was not a good movie. With Robert Downey Jr.
I forgot about that.
Pre-Robert Downey Jr. getting clean.
She was in that great Catwoman movie, though.
I know she was not.
Oh, sorry.
But, like, so she disappears. So it's always nice to see her. And there's this scene in this one where she's talking about her daughter. Where it's just like, there you are. Like, yeah. You know, we talk about that scene in Endgame when Gwyneth Paltrow, like, kills that scene. And you're just like, yeah, you can act. And then you come out of nowhere with, you know.
It's all about the roles you take.
You're two attack dogs.
You have a good agent. And it's like, are you working? Are you just getting money?
Right.
Are you taking those roles where there's writers that know what they're doing? So anyway, so he takes out the big giant guy. With a book.
Yeah, he beats him up with a book. And then he ends up, like, one of the – I thought it was so badass. He puts this giant book on the table
and slams
his head, and then at the last second he like hits him with like a forearm and snaps his neck on the spine of the book and just walks away. Like, you know.
Kudos to these people for not getting people actually killed. When you watch these scenes, sometimes aren't you just like, how did no one die during
those
these
guys
scenes?
Get kicked in the face by a horse?
These actors
I saw this at a press screening.
Oh yeah.
And like which, you know, are known for being just jaded and soulless.
Yeah.
And
I know a few of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when he kills the guy with the book, there's legit applause in the theater.
And that is the first kill of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
first of many.
That's a strong there's a few more as we go on. But so basically he's
now he's on the run. And he's hurt.
His time is running out. And this guy even says, like, it's just a few minutes, who will know the difference? And so, you know, he's already getting cut, so he gets the guy stabbed in
like the shoulder or whatever.
He goes to the doctor.
He gets in the cab, and he gives the cabbie, who is part of this world, a gold coin to take dog. That doesn't give the dog a name, to the Continental. He's like, just make sure that he's okay. And then we see the concierge shows up and brings the dog inside. Then we go then the library, then the doctor, and the doctor's he's like, I got 5 minutes. And he was like, okay, and he's stitching him. He runs out of time, and I was like, that's kind of brilliant, where the guy's like, time's up.
Yeah.
He's like, nope, I get it, and he stitches himself up. I was like, that was intense.
I like that, and I like how the doctor, there's no words spoken. I like that a lot of it is all on the screen, and he just holds the scissors, like, take this, but without saying. You can't help him, but he's like holding it, and he just grabs it.
And he says, you want to get the fourth bottle on the top shelf all the way to the right, and he takes it, and he's like, it'll give you energy. And I'm like, this is a video game thing. Like, he'll give him energy and a painkiller. And he's like, they're never going to.
I hated it when he took the gun out, because I'm like, don't turn the doctor, McJohn will kill this doctor. John would kill this doctor. Right. But to his credit, he's like,
he's like,
not going
to. He's
believe.
Like, where do you want me to go? He's like, right under my left lip. Even before he gets the word rib out, John's already shot him. He's like, they're not going to believe that you only shot me once. He's like, all right, where else? He's like, under the clavicle. Bam, he shoots him again.
Because John Wick is a surgeon. I mean,
with a
gun. That's he's so surgically precise with his. He knows exactly how to kill people efficiently.
One of my favorite lines from Kill Bill 2.
Yeah,
where she's just like, "I don't have to be a goddamn surgeon from over here with a shotgun."
Yeah.
So he gets away, and then we run into, I guess he's still on the run. And then he comes up against.
Is this where he goes into the stables?
This is where he comes to the stables.
Because that's my second favorite kill.
Oh, it's great. When he kicks the guy with the horse.
So he uses the horse.
It's amazing.
He uses the book and then he uses the horse.
He smacks the horse on the ass, and like the horse rears back and kicks this guy right in the face.
I mean, and they're real horses. Like, they
because his time has run out. That's what it is. He's out of time.
Yeah.
So now everybody's on him.
Yeah. Like, as he passes different neighborhoods, people are just walking behind him.
Right.
And I mean, it's amazing how they film this, and I think in this day and age, it's amazing they use real animals with these movies.
Oh yeah,
I'm not saying obviously they used the utmost care and made sure they were safe, but the fact, you know, most people just go to CG because they're like, I'm not going to deal with the backlash or the risk of hurting an animal or the PETA people. And in this movie, they use these experts, animal handlers, but like, they're fighting, and you see this horse just start walking.
They're also
away.
Using animals that are already domesticated. I mean, you like
dogs and horses.
Dogs and horses. They're not using
a
tigers
camel.
And elephants.
Right.
Oh, totally. Yeah. But people still don't like dogs in movies. Even, I mean,
I just think you have a lot more latitude with an animal that's already domesticated, where when you bring in a wild animal to use in a movie is when people really freak out.
But I was laughing because, you know, they're fighting and this horse in the background is just walking away. Like, I'm getting out of here. Like, and they just let him walk away in the background. Like, I don't want to be involved.
I want nothing to do with this.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard. There's not much to talk about other than awesome. It's just the choreography is stellar. And, you know,
that's the thing that I always that was sorely missing in any Batman movie. Obviously, in the 89 Batman, like, that's the guy that you want to see fight. Right. So
in Nolan movies,
you don't, though. You don't see him. It's all up in Batman Begins. And even in The Dark Knight, he doesn't fight. He does not like
a lot of ninja stuff in that movie.
But it's all jammed together.
Yeah,
because Chris Nolan can't direct a legit choreographed fight sequence. So, like.
And yeah, I mean, it's not. It's definitely not The Raid.
No, those are the ones that, like, of all the superheroes that you're going to see fight, who's the one that you want to see fight six guys? Right, he's going to fight six guys at the same time.
Yeah.
So when it's all clumped together, you don't, and you can't see anything. And I get, like, in the Tim Burton stuff, like, I get that, like, that suit was super bulky and he couldn't move. Like, I understand you got to do what you got to do. In 2012 or 2007. That suits should be a little bit different, where you can see him be Batman. And then even in the Snyder stuff, it's very fast. Like, they don't give it time to breathe, where in The Raid or this, you know, like, they have the stunt choreography for these movies have gotten so good that you can let these guys train for 6 months, let them do, you know, let Donnie Yen or let the guy, because one of the guys from The Raid is in this movie.
Yeah.
Like,
of them.
Who's the second one?
It's both the guys he fights in the end. So Mad Dog is in Raid 1 and 2, and then the other guy is the kitchen fight at the end of Raid 2.
Oh, you're right. Right on. And both those guys are amazing.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You know, like, this almost is becoming kind of like the Expendables for action stars you don't remember. I mean, like, when Mark Dukakis shows up on screen, I'm like, there's no way that this guy's still able to do everything that he could do.
He's a huge martial arts guy. I mean, absolutely. That's why he's in Double Dragon.
That's why he's in Double Dragon?
Yeah, I mean.
How about Only the Strong or anything else besides Double Dragon?
I'll never not be able to look at him and see
Dragon. I mean, I get it.
I grew up on VHS with Double Dragon.
But, like, so if you've never seen Brotherhood of the Wolf, you are doing yourself a disservice.
I haven't seen that, but I've seen Le Pec de Loup.
It's fine. But you are doing yourself a disservice. Like, it is a very underrated.
It's awesome.
It's amazing. And he's nuts in that movie.
Yeah. So back to this one. So we should say now they've got this, what did you call her?
Abdicator.
Abdicator?
Yeah.
So
Adjudicator. There you go. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. So, because in time. So.
Oh, he goes to Angelica Houston, and we find out that he's from Belarus.
Yeah, so this, like, is
we get a weird backstory for John Wick that we didn't know.
She said that she takes an orphan. So he was brought in to her organization.
Right. He's a Black Widow, basically.
Yeah, and so she basically trains ballerinas to be assassins.
Yep, and men downstairs who are doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. And they're working on a spinoff already.
Yeah, are they?
Yeah, the ballerina spinoff.
Yeah.
Nice. So, I mean, I guess with Black Widow and what's this, Red Sparrow, it's like, with the success of those, they're like, hey, we've got one of these.
Oh. Yeah.
Red Sparrow was a hit.
Well,
you saw her boobs in that movie. Oh. And that was
no, I guess maybe that wasn't the right word. But I just, with them making movies like this, like, we can do that and we can make it work.
Well, that's the thing. That's,
yeah, maybe theirs would actually be interesting.
Red Sparrow was a that should have been interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, they didn't, you would have thought that after two, they would have tried to start spinning them off. You know what I mean? Like, they would have found these kids. But we're at the third installment, and just now they're like, well, we've got this Halle Berry character. We've got this, you know, the ballerina. We've got all of this different stuff that we can spin off now.
You know what? The difference is, though, that the director and Keanu, they're not working for a major studio that's planning this all out for them. Like, they have the creative control. So if Warner was making this
franchise, we had spinoffs after one.
You might have spinoffs that came up before John Wick came out. You know, I mean, it's like
get prequels.
How can we milk this franchise for everything it's worth? And Lionsgate, to their credit, is giving Keanu and Stileski.
Are they on their own?
They were bought by someone. But Lionsgate, even if they're owned by someone, they still can operate.
Sure.
But they are giving them the freedom. And I think they work so well together because Keanu and Stileski, they're only interested and making and telling the story the way they want to.
Right.
And so if they were going to be controlled, they wouldn't keep making these movies and Lionsgate wouldn't be making money. You know, so it's a really good partnership. But that's the difference, is you have these guys wanting to tell the story. And if a ballerina story is what they want to tell, they'll let it happen.
Sure.
But they're not under the rule of some huge corporation. Like, we need to
make this
movie, two other spinoffs.
Right.
And so it's organically, and they've built the world first, and now we'll start getting into it.
Which I'm cool. So he goes to see Angelica Houston. This is where we get his backstory, that she kind of took him in and trained him and made him the Baba Yaga.
Yeah.
And so he says, I've got, you know, he's got like the rosary, and he says, this is my ticket. You got to get me out of here. She's like, you are effed, dude. Yeah. Like, I can't help you. And he was like, nope, you owe me this. And she was like, if I do this for you, like, we're square, we're even, that's it. Your ticket has been punched.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay. So he's like, I want to go.
I was on her side.
I don't think there's anything in this movie that hasn't been punched.
No, yeah. Everything gets punched.
But I felt bad because I'm like, God, he's so screwed for doing this. Like,
he screws a lot of people in this movie.
But you also get the vibe that he saved a lot of people.
Yes.
When they were in a similar position.
I agree.
Totally. So, but yeah. You're just like, you know what you're asking them to do. Anyone who's asking to help you, you understand what you're doing.
Right.
And
he says, I want to go to Casablanca. And I was like, yes. What a weird, unused part of the world that you only hear one time in the entirety of film that I can remember. And I don't like, and he's like, it just seems so random. I was like, yeah, let's do that. I'm fine with that. But he gets it, like, they take his shirt off and they brand him basically where his big tattoo is, just saying that, like, we're done. Like, you're out. We're out. So he goes to Casablanca and he goes to meet Halle Berry. This is where we see Halle. They find, like, their version of the Continental is in Casablanca. And I do love this. This scene's great too.
It's the Intercontinental.
So this scene's great too, where like the two guys are like, nope, like they're going to go attack him. And then the concierge for this version of the Continental is like, no, he gets free pass. Like, we're good to go. And then the one guy goes to like stab John and then he just shoots him.
Yeah.
He was like, well,
rules is rules.
I do like where he just hands the guy back his knife. And they just walk on their separate way. So we go to the Continental in this town. And this is where we see Halle Berry. And we find out there's a little bit of history. I do like where she shoots him. It's in the trailer where she shoots him immediately. And he was like, nice suit. Because, of course, he's still got like the Kevlar-lined bulletproof suit. He obviously helped her out. And that's why she owes him a blood.
We like find out that he saved her daughter's life.
She pulled her daughter out of this world. And Halle Berry has no clue where she is. Like, he's like, I can tell you where she is. And he was like, nope. I don't want to know. And they kind of say, we need to go see your boss. And she was like, man, you're gonna get me killed. And he was like, here's this. We're even. And she was like,
Well, that's the thing.
This is weird. So like he says that like I just want to see your boss. I don't want to kill him. I just want to talk to him. And she kind of says, and he's like, and I'll give you the marker. And she was like, keep it. So she's pissed at him. But she refuses. This is where I was confused.
I didn't say it like that. What she tells him is that the marker is null and void. He's excommunicado.
Is that what it is?
None of this stuff should. Okay. They shouldn't have to punch his ticket. She shouldn't have to honor his marker. But because of everything John Wick has done for these people,
they're doing
it despite the fact that
they don't owe
John Wick anything.
I couldn't figure out why she gave it back to him, but that makes more sense.
Okay. Yeah, but she's just like, screw it. I don't have to honor that anymore. You're excommunicado. So now we know why Braun isn't in much Game of Thrones this year.
Yeah, he did a whole scene.
Right.
Back in the U.S., the adjudicator is going through the people that have helped John Wick.
How much do you want this woman to die in this movie? Like, she's so infuriating.
Yeah.
I mean, she plays it so much that you just want to hate her.
Right.
And you're just ready for that. So, like, when's it going
to
come?
Get there. So please. She goes to Ian McShane and she says, you gave him an hour. So I will give you 24. I will give you one day or seven, one week to get your affairs in order, and you're out as the lead dude of this Continental. And he was like, okay. And she walks away. So then she goes to
Lawrence Fishburne.
Larry Fishburne. She said, you gave him seven bullets in this Kemper timber gun.
Just Smith and Wesson. Just throw out all the names.
It's all the same. And she holds up the gun. He was like, you know, you get seven.
Seven bullets, seven slashes.
And you assume that. So she's already gone to Mark Dukakis and said, we need you. You're in the game. And he was like, cool, let's do it.
We haven't brought up Mr. TikTok yet.
There is a reason to bring him up.
No,
there's not.
I was so curious out of this movie what Jason Mantzoukas was doing in it.
Oh, and he's in it for literally three seconds.
He does, you know, he brings he's one of, we found out in the second movie, again, why you have to watch these other movies, that Lawrence Fishburne rules this whole
Bowery.
And all the like people that look like just regular homeless people right. all have guns and they help you and they can hide you and they do all this stuff. So Jason Mantzoukas is one of those, and he ends
You know, when I was in New York, I didn't know how to work the subway thing to get a Metro card.
Yeah.
And a homeless guy helped us out.
Is that right?
So
that's do you think maybe the king?
I think so. I'm really glad we gave him $5 for helping us out. He probably would shot me in the face if I had. Or killed me with a book.
Either
or
one. Yeah.
He sliced my throat with a Metro card.
Yeah. That's what they do.
Yeah. You never know. So yeah, so he Jason Mantzoukas is kind of like he's like Larry Fishburne's right hand.
One of his lieutenants.
Yeah. So he kind of says she's like, and you think you kill him. They think so. Mark Dukakis shows up and cuts off, like they pull back and they cut him 7 times and he just kind of collapses.
Blood all
and you
over
just assume
the place.
That they've killed Larry Fishburne. And then they go to
really good. I think really good performance. I mean,
he's
it's
great.
It's supposed to be big and over the top, but that's the type of movie we're in.
Right.
He made a great Perry White. That should have worked as well.
Oh, sure.
Like he was great as Perry White.
But yeah, I did love him in this role and how he's, you know, you can't take out the king
the Bowery,
and all that.
Yeah.
It's just it's really cool the speeches they give him. And
he's an over the top Morpheus.
Yeah.
Like he's a more yeah, when Morpheus is allowed to be absolutely crazy, this is what you get. Did they go to a third person? Oh, they go to Angelica Houston.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you helped him out, and he was like, she's, you know, she pledges service, and she doesn't get it as bad.
Well,
like she gets like she gets a knife
like a stigmata.
Exactly.
Let me ask you guys what you thought of this. So when I was watching that scene go down of them breaking into the where the ballerinas are and to get to Angelica Houston, they kill like 30 of her people
yep.
to come in and just give her a little hurt. Like, I mean, they took out a lot of her guard.
Like that's a message.
But if they're yeah. So maybe as a message, but it's like if they're the high table and they rule over everyone, they shouldn't have any problem getting in there to do what they got to do because they work for the high table. So I'm like, that's a little excessive to come in and just have a meeting where they're like,
yeah,
they should.
But she isn't trying to run. She's like, yeah, I've got it coming. Yeah.
Right? Okay. I thought that was a little weird that they were like, had to come in like ninjas and kill everyone of her guards and then come in and not kill her. Like,
no, I thought.
What were they guarding from?
I thought that was very much a message as to like how easily we can get through here and get in here.
So that then it works. Like that's, they took out all her guards.
All of them.
I mean, that's.
Yeah. We jump back to Casablanca, and so John and I can't remember Halle Berry's character are having the sit down meeting, and she's just like, "I don't want to do this, but we'll go. I'll go." Oh, she's like Cameron in Ferris Bueller, like, "I'll go." So she gets suited up, and John's just kind of like, "Look, we're not going in there old school. Like, I just want to go in there and talk." And she was like, "Yeah, okay, cool." So they go in, and we talk to Bron. And he kind of says he has the original marker and he has the original coin, like the very first blood marker.
Well, for more of the world building, we see where the coins are made.
Yeah, right.
They're forging those coins right there.
Correct. They've got everything there. And everything kind of like John kind of says, he's like, look, I just want to make amends. I want to make this right. Let's just tell me who I need to meet. Like, tell me how to get to the guy who is in charge.
And I like this writing too, because he says to John, why would I let you leave here alive?
Right.
You know, and he goes into his whole spiel, and then he tells him the only way he's going to find the head of the whole organization.
It's kind of, did you ever see Payback with Mel Gibson?
Sure.
Okay. So the whole point of that movie is he just like, Mel Gibson is an honest thief where he just wants his cut. He doesn't want anything more than he just wants his like 55 grand. But nobody will give him a straight answer. So he's
ever seen the original
with Lee Marvin?
With Lee Marvin,
absolutely.
Oh my God!
So
he's like, then why are we talking about Payback?
Well, because in that, like, they're always talking about the one guy.
Yeah,
and I don't remember that being in Point Blank.
It's been a while since I've seen it.
Also based on The Hunter by Richard Stark.
Yeah,
that's the name of the book. But like that whole movie is like, I just want to get to the guy. Like, so he goes to James Coburn, and Jim Coburn is just like, there's not just one guy. He's like, there's always one guy, and that's what this movie is doing. Is we're trying to just get to that one guy. And finally, Bron kind of says, he's like, you can, you know, you walk in the desert, you follow this one star, just when you think you're going to die, you keep going.
It's such a...
And they might find you.
Yeah.
Like, they might come get you.
Yeah.
Jerome
Flynn is the actor who plays Bron.
Okay.
He is playing Baratta.
Okay.
So,
Bron. Game of Thrones. So he kind of says, he's like, all right, you can go ahead and go, but I need something from you.
If there's one thing we've learned in this series, what would it be? Don't mess with those dogs.
Yep.
So yeah, this
he shoots. So Halle Berry has these two attack German Shepherds.
Nope, Belgian Malinois.
Okay, they look like German Shepherds.
Oh, there's some. They're so smaller. It's what a lot of the police force use.
Oh, are they?
Is Belgian Malinois.
Okay.
They're quicker. They're more energetic.
Oh, they're quicker. All right.
They're meaner.
Yeah. So he's like, I like this one. And she's like, I'm not giving you my dogs. And I look at you. I'm looking at this and I was like, you kill that dog, you're going to get a second John Wick in the form of Halle Berry.
Oh, yeah.
And he does.
Jane Wick.
Jane Wick, yeah.
She shoots the dog.
The dogs are
wearing bulletproof vests.
Right. Which, so she's okay. But he was like, that was a lesson. And he was like, I got your lesson. And then all hell breaks loose. Yeah. They shoot Bron in the leg, and then the dog bites his dick off. Well, I mean, I'm not kidding.
We don't see that happen.
You see blood everywhere.
We presume that he's not doing too well.
And then this is probably one of the best choreographed gun battles I've ever seen, where they've got like
that full dog. Oh, I guess you're still including the same one yet. Out of Morocco.
This whole thing.
And this is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like this, especially involving animals.
I'm trying to think if there was something in the Raid or the Raid 2, but nothing to this extent where like the scene is like the directors pull back and let you see everything. There's that scene where Halle Berry's kind of walking through the shadows and she sends the two dogs like on either side of her. And it's like when you'd think that that's CG, it's not.
No.
Like those are legit dogs jumping off crates and like tearing into people. Like I could not believe what I was watching.
Oh, I was completely floored. The amount of work that it would take to pull that off is hard enough with humans who can actually, you know, comprehend what you're saying at any given time. But to the amount of effort that it would take to train those dogs with the timing and the precision that had to happen, it was mind-boggling. Like, it's kind of like when I would watch, you guys related this to Mission Impossible before, but it was sort of like when I was watching Mission Impossible Fallout, and I'm actually watching the movie and enjoying it, but also thinking in my head, I don't know how they did this.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think action movies got so formulaic where it's just like, okay, big explosion, you know, whatever, jump cut, do your thing. But there were action movies in the 80s where you're just like, I'm pretty sure they just murdered three people and got away with it. Where this one is very similar, where it's just like, I have no clue.
Well, that's why
you were able to accomplish
that. That's why they got away from that stuff, because it was so dangerous.
Oh, sure.
So they moved to CG and they used computers because of the liability for it. But these guys are experts. What's interesting, to Garrett's point, is that not only did they have to train intensely, I mean, for John Wick 2, we saw those videos of Keanu.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned Halle Berry went through the rigorous training, but that she had to become a dog trainer too.
Yeah.
The dogs actually were listening to Halle Berry's commands. So she went and after all her fight choreography, all of her gun and weapon training, then she went to the kennels and had to learn how to train dogs.
Right.
Not that people aren't helping on set, but like they were listening to her commands. They were, you know, when she was sending them out and everything, I mean, she was actually learning those commands. And what they did that I read about is that they trained the dogs to think that they used a technique that a lot of trainers do where, like, it looks like they're attacking and all that. I mean, that's what they're trained to do, but they think they're playing.
Yeah.
So they taught them that every time they saw the color green, they would use, like, green toys that they would be playing. And so wherever the dogs were supposed to bite, they would put green material and green toys. So when they're going in there and they're attacking and people's leg or their arm or whatever, there's something green there that they're editing out.
Okay.
But they think they're playing, and then as soon as you give them the command to stop, they sit down, you pet them or whatever. But they hope.
Yeah.
Right. But that's what these dogs are doing. I mean, so for the dogs, they think it's playtime.
Right.
And for us, it looks so brutal, but it's because that's how they learn to play.
It's funny that they would use – I mean, green makes sense because you can just
– Yeah, you can green screen it out.
Green screen it out.
It's bright. Yeah, and it's easy for them to see, and exactly. So, I mean, the fact that they had to do all this training with these dogs, and it's not like the dogs are in there for two scenes, and they're that was a neat trick.
Yeah.
I mean, this
entire –
They
are front and center the entire time.
They stop the human action, and then she'll call the dogs, and they come in and
– Right.
I will say right before this, though, the one thing I felt that – John Wick 3 did really well was it had nuggets of humor here and there too.
They felt a lot more humor.
The line that Halle Berry gives, you know, after she gets her dog shot, and she goes, "He killed my dog," and John just looks at her and goes, "I get it." I mean, it works so well because that's exactly what the audience is thinking, and it's not this cheesy, hokey moment that takes you out of the scene. It just the humor in this movie comes at really natural points and really natural times where you can kind of chuckle in between, you know, people's heads getting blown off and guys getting their dicks bit off, you know? It's just,
I think it's also
it's really incredible
about the line reading, because he doesn't oversell the joke.
He under-delivers.
Right? Like, he under-delivers. He's like, I get it.
Like, I feel like that's just him.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
He's just reading. The advantage that Keanu has
in this, now.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. The advantage that Keanu has in, like, I almost wanted to watch that that one with Winona Ryder.
The Lake House?
No. They just did another movie together where
Lake House 2?
No. Where, like, they end up, like, he's friends with the groom.
The Lake House Chapter
2. That's what it is. Yes. Parabellum. Where, like, he's a friend of the groom.
It was a religious thing, right? Or was that the Lake House? That was him and Sandra Bullock, right?
Yeah, I don't remember.
That was the time travel one.
Yeah. But he did one with Winona Ryder recently. There was another romantic.
Yeah, we're like, but like, he's John Wick.
What?
Like, he's John, like his delivery is just like John Wick. So I was like, I kind of want to see that in not a John Wick world and see how that works with Winona, you know.
Because
Winona Ryder is, she's a kind of wackadoo sometimes, but.
Sometimes?
All the time.
Okay.
No. So like, but I wanted to see like that delivery outside of John Wick. And I'm just like, I'm pretty sure that's just Keanu. Like, he's just reading a script. He's like, how would this sound in my head?
He's good. He's found the perfect.
Liam Neeson did.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he found something that worked for him. And and he's always been interested in martial arts and all that. So I mean, that's why he did that Master Tai Chi. Yeah, that's why he did it. He loves martial arts. And so he's found something that he enjoys, you know, thoroughly enjoys doing. And he's good at. And he works in these worlds and
So they beat everybody.
Yeah,
they jump in the car and they take
even
off.
Dogs going through windows in the car, I thought were great action.
They
sequences.
Don't even miss a beat.
Like, I mean, just, but it, and it was an all on command. You know, they would tell them to attack. The dogs go through windows. The dog runs up a wall, which was
that was
CG.
Awesome.
It was real. I mean, the dog ran and jumped and scooted his way up a wall and caught someone. And again, they think they're playing,
right?
So their sleeve has green or whatever, and that dog runs and jumps up and catches the sleeve, and then. You know, they're supposed to knock him. You assume they knock him over,
right.
Bite him up there, whatever. But all that stuff really happened practically. And that is what makes this movie so amazing.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Is that they've got, I mean, this is the closest thing to ballet I can think of. Their choreography is
I find it hard to say that you're wrong. Because, the core, you need to be on your mark. You need to be on point.
If you don't hit,
you don't
your,
hit
marks,
your mark, yeah.
Someone's getting hurt. Like, they have to practice.
Right.
And just like a ballet and all the movements together. And,
I appreciate all of the tactical maneuvers. You know, like, I go back to, I think it was like Beverly Hills Cop 2 or maybe it was 1. Where, like, there's a scene where...
Banana in the Tailpipe?
No, that one works. That's a real thing. But, like, there's a scene where Eddie Murphy's going to clear a corner and he's got the gun up around his face. Just so the camera would be on his, you know, like, so you see everything, like, right here. They've gotten away from that, and they've started to actually use legit tactics, like, you know, if a gun jams, like, an actual tactical reload, or the way you move around a corner and clearing, you know, doing all that stuff. So actually watching that.
It feels so realistic.
It is real. Like, that's the thing. It's like, they're doing it the right way, for the most part. Obviously, it takes some liberties because it's a movie, but for the most part, the way they're moving, the way they're holding their weapons... Like, everything is tactical, and it's how you would probably do it in that situation.
One of the best parts of these movies is that he reloads.
Yeah,
exactly.
He always reloads. Right. That, it's amazing, because in these movies, these people have unlimited clips. And in this movie, I mean, you can go through and you can count the amount of shots he has.
Well, he's pulling, like, he runs out of clips, but he's pulling clips off the bodies.
Yeah.
So
he has a belt with clips. I mean, he always has, he explained, right, even though he has all this ammunition and guns, you see how he gets them and you see how he gets to his ammo.
Which I always appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, every time he has to reload, it's just amazing.
You're watching Dirty Harry, you're just like, 1, 2, 3. That's a revolver, so we're going to run out here. 5, 7, nope. 10. Okay, we're going to keep going.
But yeah,
I kind of compared it to like the antithesis of Hard Boiled, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Where
great
there's
call.
Just
yeah.
Millions of bullets and nobody cares about reloading. Right? But then they at least acknowledge this, like, hey, he has to reload. So the one scene in the dogfight where you get the opposite Mexican standoff where they're all empty.
Yes.
And it's just whoever reloads faster, and John's clearly the best. So
fantastic.
He reloads and gets both of them. I mean, it's great. The other fight that we didn't touch on, though, the
knife
fight in the
absolutely.
Beginning.
Yeah.
And they actually made a conscious effort to show them throwing knives and the handles hit the guys instead of the blades.
Yes.
Like, what movie have you ever seen, like, acknowledge that, hey, not every knife throw is going to be perfect.
Spot on, right.
I
except
love,
for that one guy looks like a pincushion by the end of
yeah.
that.
I loved that scene. I was just about to mention that exact thing. So the stuff they do in this movie is so realistic, and that's why it's so cool, because you're not sitting here. It's hard. It's hard when you've seen so many movies to not sit there and go, oh, that was cheap, or oh, it doesn't work like that. You're just kind of trained to because you've seen so much. You're right. A little jaded. And these movies, you watch it and you just go, holy crap. Like, you're not thinking, oh, that doesn't work.
Seriously, like, go back, go find Donnie Yen did a flick called Flashpoint that is amazing. It's kind of like, what was the Martin Scorsese one? The detective one.
The Departed?
Yes. It's kind of like that that premise.
Oh.
But, like, the fight scenes are ridiculous. The Raid movies, Raid 1 and 2, are probably two of the greatest. Judge Dredd is another one, yeah. Which is basically the
Dredd?
Raid.
Yeah, you mean Dredd.
Dredd, yeah. Not Judge Dredd.
Yeah,
I was like, not that one.
Dredd is the Raid.
Dredd is the Raid. But so, like, there has been this revolution of action movies where it's not just, you know, in the 80s, it was guys who couldn't walk through it. They had to turn sideways to walk through a door because they were so big.
Well, this is like horror. They're starting to do it right.
I agree.
Not just cheap jump scares. It's not cheap action that doesn't make sense to wrap it around a huge bulky star, like you said. I mean, right. They're like, we're going to do it right.
Don't get me wrong. Raw Deal is a great movie.
But it's like these movies with the actual martial arts and everything, they're great.
Right. So they head down to the desert. John Wick's kind of on his own. There's a great scene with Halle Berry kind of pours the dog's water. She tosses John the bottle. And then
they're
not even.
And also, like, she's screwed because of him. Like, she went and helped him because he cashed in his favor that she really didn't have to repay.
Right.
Made her kill all these people, and now she's in trouble with the high table. So it's like,
so now she's going to go get
it. It isn't a happy ending.
There's your Halle Berry movie.
Yeah, but in a normal movie, what would happen at the end of this fight, it'd be like they'd make up, and now see you later, and they're all good because they fought together, but no. They
fall in love.
Yeah, so but there's repercussions.
She has a little bit of water left. He looks at it, and she takes it, and she drinks it.
Hardly even spits it back.
Swigs it around a little bit, and then barely spits it back. So John's on his trek to walk through the desert. He collapses.
These are beautiful scenes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, him walking against the backdrop of the desert.
Yeah.
And when it goes to night with the stars. Like
Kane from Kung Fu.
Yeah, I mean, but we have to say that aside from the action and the script and the world they've built, like, this is a beautiful looking movie.
Yeah.
Action movies don't generally look as good as these movies. Yeah. But especially with – they've always been known for, like, the neon lights and the color palette has been really cool. And they keep that up with this one. You just get a new palette, which is a lot of these desert colors and tones and everything.
And when you get to the lead guy, all of that pops again because he's wearing bright whites and bright blues and different, you know, bright reds. So he gets taken. A guy on a camel finds him, brings him back.
Thought this was funny.
Yeah.
Throws him off the camel.
Just kicks him off the camel. He wakes up, and then, of course, we are introduced to the leader, the main guy. And the guy kind of says, look, I have to kill you, or you can – he basically, John's like, I just want to remember my wife. That's all I really want to do. And he was like, okay, I'll kill you now. You'll never remember her again. Or you can re-pledge yourself to the high table, and you will do what we tell you to do, and you can remember her.
I thought this was the only thing that I thought was a little wishy-washy about his motivation. I don't know. Just the fact that, like, why are you want to be alive so I can remember her? You know, usually he's killed so many people, done so many bad things. Maybe he just dies and then he can be reunited in some afterlife. It's interesting that he wants to stay alive to remember her. I don't know.
He doesn't get to go to the afterlife.
Well, maybe
not. He
doesn't
get to go where she goes.
Yeah, maybe not. I just, it's an interesting motivation. And
John Wick 4, hell.
But I mean,
you know, I had the same exact thought as you, Kevin. But I felt like the conversation with Winston, Ian McShane, that happens shortly thereafter really kind of rounded that out. So I felt the same thing. Like, okay, kind of feels a little bit cheap. But then when Winston's like, hey, is this really the man you want to be? Like, is this how you want her, you know, to acknowledge? I know she can't acknowledge his memory, but, you know, is this who you want to represent when you're going out? And I felt like that kind of closed that for me. But for a little bit, I had the same exact thought.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm glad they did that too, because he talks some more sense into him. Yeah. Ian McShane does.
Well, so we should say that, like, the leader of the high table says, you gotta pledge yourself. You gotta give me one. You gotta give me a gift. So of course he gives him. He gives him the finger, and he gives him his wedding ring.
This was a huge point of contention for Lionsgate. This is the one thing they did come up against, because
that
in
Lionsgate
order
didn't want him to get the finger. Well, because they got to film the rest of these movies with him missing a finger.
Not only this movie, but you are now increasing the budget of every John Wick movie.
Give him a glove.
You can, but I think in this world, like, then we'd all know what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, these people are smarter than that. They're like, we don't want him to walk around with gloves, and everyone goes, ah, I know why he's wearing a glove. And so that would be the easy way out. But they were so they wanted to be taken seriously. They wanted John Wick and his intentions to be taken seriously. And so they fought for this. And they said, we'll sacrifice, which I don't know where they did, but they said, we'll sacrifice budget in other places.
I think it was the CGI for that horse. Yeah, that
horse. It did not bother me in the slightest. I mean, I did.
He does hit that guy in the face twice.
Garrett liked the horse scene, right?
Yeah, it looked good to me. I like the scene. The motorcycle scene than the horse scene.
I didn't
see CGI-wise.
Yeah. Oh, see, I like the motorcycle scene more than the horse scene.
Oh, I liked it more. I felt the CGI was a little shakier on the motorcycle scene than anything around the horse.
Okay.
But it's like just the fact that Keanu's riding a horse around, like, I mean, those are real horses.
Yeah.
And obviously they have to do CG stuff during the motorcycle and the horse are the most obvious because he can't be doing that with close-ups. But, I mean, he's really riding a horse around New York for those scenes other than the really crazy action one. But as far as choreography goes for, like, him – going to the side of the horse and shooting people.
Man, that was so cool.
That was so cool. Yeah. And maybe that's why I gave it a little credit because I'm watching him and I'm just like, the fact that they pulled this off into any kind of a coherent action sequence.
Right.
But this was a huge deal. And so, to me in my head, I'm like, God, why didn't you just give him the ring? That was a big enough.
The tools were there for a reason.
Yeah, I know. I just, I'm like,
He cuts his wedding finger off, gives him the ring.
He picks up his own finger and pulls it off. And
they sear the wound with another,
hot poker. Hot brand.
They have like a thing, like, this is the tool we use when we cut off people's fingers.
And I think the deleted scene is him like, now did you sterilize that? Right. You did.
Okay, good. So they get him squared away, and he gets a new suit. So did he wear an all-black suit in the first one?
I feel like he's worn – well, he usually does have a white shirt. Maybe not. It's cool, though. I love the all-black.
I like the all-black. Yeah. He goes to Winston and he's like, Winston kind of says, like we talked about, Winston kind of says, he's like, you're here to kill me, huh? And he was like, yeah, like, you know, I'm here to kill you.
At this point, I had no idea where the movie was going.
I didn't know.
Because, I mean, he just cut off his finger, right? And the leader of the High Table says that if you want to survive, you're in our debt. And the only way that we're going to stop your excommunicado is to kill Winston.
Right.
And Winston, as we know, is John Wick's friend.
They are really close
to each other. And Winston hates the fact he had to do the excommunicado, but there are rules.
There are rules.
Consequences. And so that's why he gave him that hour leeway, which the High Table was not happy about.
Correct.
But most people wouldn't get that extra.
No.
I mean, that's not happening. So now he's really got this moral dilemma, but there's that great scene that you talked about.
They go back and forth, and finally the abdicator shows up. She's like,
Adjudicator.
Is like, are you going to relinquish it? And he was like, no, I don't think I am. And then she goes to John. She's like, are you going to kill him? He's like, no, I don't think I am. So now we've got everybody's back on the same page. And now John has to fight the two guys from the raid.
The concierge actually gets to do stuff in this movie.
Yeah, which is great.
Fantastic. We've always seen him as such a great character, but we've never seen him in action.
Right.
And so they go down to the vault. Like
they do. So Mark Dukakis and his crew are there. And the adjudicator kind of says, she's like, oh, we'll bring in some backup, some of the best backup we've got.
Oh,
it's like, okay.
We did skip over, but real quick, we should mention pretty awesome motorcycle sequence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And which ends at the footstep of the Continental. Oh,
yeah. Right.
And
he's like, puts his hand on the steps, like, safe.
Yep.
And I like this. I like this a lot because, again, with the world building, so you've got Mark Dukakis, who is, you know, clearly he's okay to still be in this world and everything.
Right.
And he's like, you're excommunicado. It doesn't matter. But the fact is, if you still conduct business on Continental grounds, even though John Wick is excommunicado, he can't do it.
I love the scene where they're going to meet Winston and John sits down on the couch and Mark Dukakis sits
right next to him.
Like, oh, yes.
Yeah, but he sits straight up, like, just right next
and
to him.
And then John, has to move over to the chair.
And we found out that just like, he's a fanboy.
Yeah, he's like, you're my hero. Like, this is such an honor. And John's like, cool.
But what's really cool in this world, though, and I think this is a testament to the writing, like, that scene, I think, could be perceived a little goofy, but it also shows you that these assassins are just people, too. Like, this is their job. And so even though he has to kill John Wick, he looks up to him as one of the most legendary hitmen of all time.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's interesting when these characters get to break and go to the Continental, which is Sanctuary. We all know, again,
unless you're John, and then you shoot a guy in the face.
They go watch those other movies. Yeah. They're important. But it's Sanctuary, and they all drink, and they hang out, and they have safe. They can get medical attention, whatever they need to do there. And so this guy can just be him, and he's this goofy guy that, he's been a great martial artist, but he also looks up to John. And it was a really neat break because it's like, oh, it's just like the coyote and the sheepdog walking out.
It's exactly what it is. I think
I might have said that in the first.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. When you get to the Continental, it's just like, hey, Bert. Hey, Barry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what this scene was.
Yeah. So the fight ensues. We go down to the bottom level.
So he's like,
they suit up.
Boy, John says, so am I still
excommunicado?
Well, no, like, am I still like not privy to your services or whatever? Like, now,
yeah, I think we'll make an exception. Yeah.
Under these circumstances.
Yeah, we're good to go.
What do you need?
Yeah.
I love the references to the Matrix here, right? Because you've already got Keanu and Fishburne and Selesky, everybody. But then when he asks him what he needs, he drops the guns, lots of guns.
Yes.
And then goes into a lobby that's green tinted and takes out a bunch of armed guards. I mean, that was pure vintage Matrix. The people who think Wick exists in the Matrix are gotta be eating up that scene.
Well, and also like they want to do another Matrix. Which I don't know how you do. Because 2 and 3 are not good movies.
Well, no, they're not.
No.
But that's why I think we need to get like a reboot. Because I think now in this day and age, I think that these people want to do it and do it right.
Yeah.
Like, and especially if you get the same stunt people.
I will say that Highway scene in 2 is baller.
The 2 and 3 have scenes, but overall they're not good.
No.
But that first Matrix and God, that lobby scene, I remember getting that clip and getting it on my computer, you know, and this is way before the internet and everything was on YouTube and streaming. But I remember getting that scene.
Kevin took a VHS copy and literally edited just out that scene.
I don't know I don't know how. I probably got it on LimeWire or something. Who knows? But I remember watching that scene over and over. And I remember my friends and I would actually like set scenes to our own music and stuff. Like
I had a McFarlane did a Keanu action figure where it's the state. So it's him when he does the flip.
Yeah.
So it, like you would, he had a peg in his hand.
Yeah.
And you'd put it into the base of this mod like figure.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, they had like explosions behind them. And I think I might still have it actually.
That's cool. But and who doesn't know that? Bom, bom,
bom, bom, oh bom, yeah.
Like you just in your
head. The soundtrack is awful. Like it's not good. But that scene is ridiculous. I hate.
You don't like the soundtrack?
No. That scene and that the song for that.
No, oh, I think everything about the original Matrix, like that's a stellar movie.
I don't have any complaints on that one.
But those 2 and 3, they got worse and worse. Two was okay and had some great action
sequences. Three when they go to the guy
big in
the
rave underground.
No, I could deal with the rave, but when they go to the guy in the bank of TVs.
No, that's two. That's two.
Okay,
because he's setting up. And that 30-minute diatribe, what the hell is he talking about? It gets crazy. But yeah, in 3, it's like there's a couple scenes, but most of the time it's a big CG thing swimming around, and it's like, this is not what I signed up for.
Sperm.
But so they give him all the guns. Well, I mean, at least what they think will be adequate. They give
They even says, he's like, since you've been gone, there have been some upgrades. And he was like, all right, whatever. I don't, like, cool.
But he gets a new handgun. He gets a bunch of clips for that and all that. And he sets out, and the concierge is out there with his gun, and they've got all their lobby guys out there fighting.
But those lobby guys are a bunch of red shirts.
The red shirts,
they don't last long at all.
But the crazy thing is, so they bust in these two huge buses of the table's best assassins, hitmen, whatever you call them, their highest trained operatives, and they come in, and they have completely bulletproof.
Yeah. So John is doing what John does, but it's not working.
And I love how – so they take out all the good guys, which I don't love that, but you see how crazy these forces are. And then John is not taking them out right away, but he's just like knocking them out. He's like, he has to shoot 3 or 4 of them. And then he has to go back to the first one and shoot them
like
again.
The only point of vulnerability is the back of their neck.
Yeah, so he's like, as they're knocked down, he's pulling their helmets to the back from the side and shoot them like 4 times in the head.
He can get them. It's just the helmet's not attached, so he can get them the back of their neck, the front of their throat, or the visor flips up, and then he shoots. I love it. So in all his action choreography, amazing fight scene, he's having to stop, and as he's reloading, shooting, and all this, he's pulling up visors as he's shooting.
So this is the best part, right? Is this one of the tropes is like, obviously one dude can't fight 5 guys, but when he's constantly knocking guys out, like, so like,
but that's the thing, he's knocking them out, and
it works. It works in this scenario because he's knocking them down and going after another one, and then as the other one's getting up, he's shooting them in the back.
That's what I'm saying.
He's taking them out of. He's not killing them, but he's taking them out of the game.
He's slowing them down. He slows them down and then can get to them as they wake up.
So as they run out of ammo, they have to go back down to the basement. And I do like Rue's like, bulletproof, huh? And he's like, well, you know, I told you. So then they both load up with shotguns. And he's like, with armor-piercing rounds. So they go back up.
This was such a cool scene. I mean, not only was the scene before cool, but when they get the shotguns, the choreography of this is...
And now they're just taking everybody out. Like, these things...
They're, like, blowing their heads off.
Cut through the armor, and they take everybody out. So
and the way he has to reload shotgun shells, stop it was great. And reload them, and I mean, none of this is CG. I mean, as far as reloading, Keanu's putting shells into a gun, and
so he has now he's got to go upstairs, and now he has to fight. You know, this is basically Game of Death.
Yeah,
where Bruce Lee has to start at the bottom level, work his way up to the main bad guy. So he works his way up, and I do like the comedy in this scene too.
I did have one little problem before this, and I wanted to get you guys' opinions. So Keanu Reeves is fighting all of these invulnerable forces. He gets the shotgun, starts killing them, but then two of them go into the water. Mark Dukakis kills another guy that's about to get him, and then he's like, "Only I get to kill you," and then he sends off all of his ninja assassins to kill him.
Yeah, because I took that as he knew John Wick would beat them, and then John would come to him damaged.
Well,
and he'd win.
But when I don't know. Wouldn't he know that John Wick would beat all the other guys? Like, I just thought it was weird to say, I get to kill you. And then he sends off the best ninja assassins ever.
I guess I took, like, John didn't know that guy was behind him. So he took that guy out. And then he knew, like, I have to beat this guy down. If I have any chance of beating him, like, he has to be at his weakest.
Yeah.
And he sends all his goons after him. So anyway, John gets back to this crazy looking room that's like the main dining. I don't know what it was.
It's the administrative
office or whatever. Yeah. And it's just glass. Like, it's all glass everywhere. And he ends up fighting the two guys from the raid. I love the, like,
I like the respect here.
Well, even the two guys are like, you want to get up? And then so he says,
they don't want to fight him while he's down. Right. They're like, you get up and prepare
yourself. Almost like the scene in Infinity War or Endgame where Cap has to fight himself. And he's like, oh, I got it. So, like, there's the scene where they let him get up. They go to go reach, like, John's knocked down. They go to help him up, and he kind of, like, waves him off, and he takes his belt off, and he ends up fighting them both. And it's a killer scene. Like, it's those two dudes. If you've never seen Raid 1 or 2, you are missing out on probably one of the best action flicks of the last 10 years. He takes both of those guys out in a ridiculous action sequence.
Takes out a lot of glass cases, too.
A lot of glass cases.
But luckily, what's the count on that?
Luckily, he was wearing shoes.
Yeah.
You know. And then he has to fight Mark Dukakis in another... Like
I liked Mark Dukakis upstairs clapping, slow clapping. And I do like the way it's like it's ninja-esque, that stealthiness of how they would both disappear. Because first Mark Dukakis does it to John Wick, and he does it several times and show up behind glass. And that's the great thing about glass is that it manipulates your visuals. And so he uses that to his advantage. And then John Wick turns it around. Yeah. It's like, hey, I can do that too.
Well, John Wick, obviously they're alluding that there's no style that John Wick doesn't know.
Right.
So anyway, he ends up gutting Mark Dukakis, and I love this scene too, where they're both kind of laying there on the floor, and they both kind of sit up, and he's just like, that was a pretty good fight, huh? And John Wick's
he still wants to impress him.
Yeah, it was pretty good. He's like, just give me a second,
let me catch
my breath, because he's got a sword like through his chest.
Yeah.
He's like, just let me catch my breath, and he was like, okay.
He was like the Black Knight and Holy Grail.
Exactly, yeah. Just a flesh wound.
He's like, let me catch my breath, and then I'll get you.
And John's I'll catch you. No, you won't. And he stands up and walks away. And then, of course, Mark Dukakis dies. While at the same time, the concierge and Winston are having a parlay with the adjudicator.
Oh. Hey, we got it right.
Hey! and she's kind of... And
ironically enough, she had the game.
Yeah, exactly. So they're making the deal. And he kind of says, he's like, look, just give me my thing back and we'll call it even. And she was just like, what? No. And then here comes John out of the elevator. And he was like, what are we doing? Oh, we're parlaying? Great. So the deal becomes.
I love that little detail, though, because going back to what we said before with the world building.
Yeah.
Even though these are high priced, insane assassins, they all have this rule book that they play by, this honor.
Yeah.
And so you've got, you know, all these people have to honor the excommunicado, and you have the adjudicator and the high table, and they don't instantly kill her because they know that would have repercussions.
Right.
Because this whole time I'm like, well, they're fighting back. Why not just kill this person? But it's like, that's just an extra level of
The badness.
And they would just send the next adjudicator.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, she's doing her job.
So can I tell you how bad I wanted the guy from the high table to be Van Damme? Like, it's just one of those things where I feel like, that dude deserves a little bit. He's worked really hard to kind of revamp his career with JCVD. And
I wish that wasn't canceled after one season.
No, the other. Now, JCVD is the movie, but Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Oh, I wish that wasn't canceled.
So I was hoping that we would get, out of all the guys that are older guys that are still around that might be able to still go, I feel like he's one of those guys.
Totally.
But
maybe he'll be in John Wick 4.
I would love that to happen. Yeah. So anyway, they.
I mean, Mark Dukakis is basically the host of Iron Chef. That's what he's doing.
That is what
and
he's
they got
doing.
Him in this yeah, movie. Right. So I don't think. Yeah,
I don't think
why.
He had anything else going on. I don't even think Iron Chef is on.
And anymore. Obviously, he keeps up. He's good. I'm not saying that, but
he's great.
He's not like a leading star in all these movies still. So
they wanted him to be the next Bruce Lee, the American Bruce Lee, and it just didn't work
gotcha.
Out. Don the Dragon Wilson is the one that I would want in the next John Wick.
he gets it.
Yep. So yeah,
kickboxing, sport of the future.
Yes, all day with Don the Dragon Wilson.
Batman Forever.
So Winston makes the deal, and then he turns around and he shoots John.
And she's like, "That's okay." And what about him?
What about him?
And at this
like,
point,
oh, yeah,
I mean, he
him?
Was given one chance. I mean, the high table, the as high as you go, as far as we know and believe, said you have to kill Winston.
Right.
And if you don't, then you're done.
Right.
We're not calling this off. Ian McShane, who I mean, in America,
I love
American Gods, obviously Deadwood for
yeah,
you Deadwood
so good.
Fans. He's a great actor, and I love him as
Hellboy
in these movies.
He was good in Hellboy. He's always fun.
He was
fine.
Good in the
he's
movie.
Fine.
He
was yeah.
some scenery.
Yeah, he's yeah. fine. But he's a great actor, and so I think he really brings something special to these movies as being the head of the Continental.
Right.
And his line delivery is impeccable.
He has a way of like having gravitas with some really.
Yeah,
silly stuff.
But he makes them believable.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
I think he was in a Pirates movie. I think he was Blackbeard.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was.
In the last one.
I'm pretty sure he was.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, the gravitas, that's the perfect way to put it. And his delivery is spot on, because what do we do about him? And he goes, oh, well, he has to die, and I'm not doing
and
justice.
And you're just like, whoa.
And then, yeah, and you can't help but to jump to the conclusion of, oh, they're in on it. I can't believe that they weren't in on it.
There was not a doubt in my mind that it was all they were in on it.
But they weren't.
Absolutely they were.
I don't think so for a second.
Winston knew if he would survive that fall because of the suit. The bullets wouldn't go through the suit.
I don't think so, man. That was a gnarly fall. Do you think they were in on it, Garrett?
Dude, I was going to ask you guys this.
Okay.
Because that's not crystal clear.
No. I'm a coin flip on this one. Yeah. I think it can be read both ways, and I kind of maybe think that they wanted it to be just like that heading into four because – It leaves so many questions, right? You don't know who's on whose side. I can be convinced either way. I don't know.
I don't know. My first thought was that he wasn't, that he turned on him.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
But then at the same
time, because I think
time,
they want you to think
if
they're
he
in
was
going to
turn on him, why'd he give him the hour in the first place?
Right.
Well, I think it came down at that point. Like, that was his last thing he could do to get the Continental back.
I feel like.
And the king is like, oh, see where you're, you know, what I, whatever he said.
So I feel like. When she's so he falls off the roof, they go down there to look for the body. The body's gone.
That was a near fatal drop. Like
but
that
I
was
feel,
like he fell
see,
in a.
I will say this: I don't think that this was a plan between him and John Wick. No, based on what John Wick says in the last scene of this movie.
Yes,
right.
And if it was in on it, he would have gone off, bounced off a canopy into a garbage dumpster. I mean,
well,
John Wick.
Do that.
No, but he doesn't. He falls.
You meant that he would have landed in a safe.
Oh,
way.
I see.
Yeah, I mean that. Fall was almost killed.
Well, I guess I feel like so they go back downstairs, the body's gone. She's like, you better hope that this is taken care of. And I do like the look on his face. He's just like, who knew the body would disappear? Or I feel like there was all he knew that John would survive.
But he said, how far could he go?
How far could
he
go?
He is,
and so. Maybe he's trying to have it both ways.
Maybe.
Hey, I did what you wanted me to do.
And I knew that he would survive it.
But if he survives it, then not my fault.
Yeah.
I just
watched me kill him. So we cut back to Jason Mantzoukas carrying John on a
grocery cart,
kind of just dumps him over.
See,
and we find out that Larry
Fishburne. Mr. TikTok saved John Wick. If it weren't for Mr. TikTok, John wouldn't have made it down there. She would have went and had him killed. So
yeah.
Jason Mantzoukas saves the
We
day.
Find out that Larry Fishburne is still alive. He's cut up pretty good, but he's still alive. And he goes, I got to ask you, are you pissed now? And John just kind of looks at him and goes,
yeah,
I'm pissed.
Yeah.
And that's how it closes.
Yeah.
And I was like.
I don't think John Wick would have been pissed if he was in on it.
I don't think he was
in. That's what I'm saying.
I don't think that they were in on it together, but I feel like Winston knew. That I can make it look like I've killed him, and I get the Continental back. John can do whatever he's gonna do.
Okay,
and we're good to go. Whatever comes next in 2 years,
we'll see.
Like chapter
yeah.
four, not. Oh, this is where we find out the Parabellum is actually a language for the art of or the war begins or something.
It was like if you want peace,
prepare for war.
And Parabellum was
prepare for war. That was cool.
Yeah, and we're good to go.
So I guess the next one will just be Bellum.
Bellum.
Oh, don't know if that's
But yeah, this was great, man. This is like, I will watch these movies as long as they keep up with this quality.
Yeah.
Like, game on.
Yeah, these aren't my kind of movies, but these are I was looking forward to seeing John Wick 3, yeah. And I don't typically look forward to seeing movies, especially these.
These kind.
It's my favorite of the series. And I'm splitting hairs here, right? Because like, I would say that 3 is better than 1, but it's real close. And then 2 is kind of the lower end. I love that you guys mentioned The Raid so much, because I left this thinking this is the best action movie I've seen since either of The Raid films.
Without question.
And I just remember sitting in the theater, like, you know, you'll hear people say stuff online like, oh, this such and such. And I remember sitting there thinking, this movie. Like, the whole time I was watching it, like, it was incredible. Like, there's very little I would change. I would nitpick things here and there, but the quality of action that you get in this, plus the, like I mentioned before, the world building and the story writing, it's top notch stuff.
Yeah.
Very little downtime in this movie.
There are pacing,
though. It's not like there's not, okay, come on, get to the next kill.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going. Once John Wick starts going.
And then you've got the Halle Berry movie that you could spin off. You've got the ballerinas that we know they are. The Continental TV show.
Yeah, so. Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how they build this world and continue. Yeah.
Game on.
Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket and on Show Spoilers, where we will be recording after tonight. The final episode of Game of Thrones.
This is the last episode of Show Spoilers.
What?
No.
And this is Tom. You can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And Garrett, where can they find you?
On the Twitter machine as well at 2viewsGarrett, GARRETT.
And what's the latest episode you have for your podcast?
We got our own John Wick 3 coming up.
You son of a bitch.
We did 2 in-game episodes. So we did a big Avengers Endgame, and then we did a crossover. There's a Kansas City podcast here that's called First Issue Club, where they do comics, first issues of comics that come out every week, like a book club. And we were like, well, Endgame's so awesome. Let's go talk to them about Endgame. So we did like 2 back-to-back Endgame episodes. So we ran through our Marvel stuff pretty well.
Awesome. And don't forget, you can find the show online at facebook.com/realspoilers, and you can check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get bonus content and the pride in helping out the show.
That's right.
So that's it for this one. Coming up next week, we will tackle Aladdin or Brightburn. I think Aladdin.
Damn it.
So until next time, Manny was secretly wearing a bulletproof vest.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.